Well, that thing is incredible, great job, Stephen. Of course, you know, the song letters are not mentioned in the Bible, but I'm assuming somebody had to get it going, so.
I think it was Thaddeus.
Don't be full scripture, man. I'm sure somebody got it going, but you have a great song letter, but people don't see that really do any good to have a song letter, so you guys have just been incredible, and the comments about this particular theme, I know, I think I told you when James called me, I was kind of like, are you sure you want to do this one? And even though I've been asked to do this several times, I always ask that, are you sure? Because I really don't want to do these lessons. But you weren't here earlier in the week when my wife was still alive, and she said, it's not about what you want to do. It's about what they need. And that's just always been her philosophy. It's not about me. It's this whole deal. It's not about me. And even though I kind of knew that over the years I was a Christian, just in our latter years, seeing her growth, and as she's our education director for our little kids, fourth grade and under, and she was in charge, but she wanted her team to feel a part. It's not about her, it's about us and this church. You know, these two congregations, it's not about you, it's about the congregation. It's not whether the carpet's the color you want or, you know, the curriculum set up exactly the way you want it. It's not about that. If it was up to me, I would have orange and white curtains alternating in a checkerboard. How many of you for that? Amen. Thank you for your support. Sadly, it wasn't 100%. But see, some of you want the orange and navy blue. I see though. But that's something that has stuck with me, and so I do appreciate James selecting this theme. Y'all agreeing to that. And from the comments you've made, I can tell it's something that maybe type of thing we need to do more. But if I'm ever able to be with you again, maybe we can do something a little more traditional as far as type of study. And I'm hoping tonight might be that just a little bit, but I certainly appreciate being out here with all of you guys. I used to not think about heaven much because I was having it so good down here. In fact, I heard a foreigner talk about, he was amazed at listening to American preaching in the churches. He was just surprised. I don't talk about heaven all that much. And he, you know, where he was from, they talked about it all the time because life was so miserable. And if you've had a real good, spoiled American life like I had for a long time, hey, I'm pretty good down here. But after the events of the last couple of years in my life, heaven looks a lot better. And it's just, those of you that have lost loved ones, you're going to join them again one day. And that's encouraging. I don't know how atheists make it. They don't have any of this. They just don't have any of it. And it's pitiful to think about. Well, those of you that don't know me that had maybe this your first night, I've been coaching up until last year. Last year was my first year to not coach at high school since 1981 because my wife got really bad. So I announced my retirement to the team. As I told you the other night, we were 1-17 my last year. So I went out in this blaze of futility. And so we're coasting along, which was our problem. We were coasting. And so we had about a third of the season left. And I had decided I was going to resign after this year in hopes that I'd be taking care of Lisa when I got home from school every day the following year. And I would not even be wanting to think about coaching. So I told the team early, you know, a lot of times the coaches wait to the end of the year. They don't want that to disrupt the season. Well, our season was so terrible, I thought, I want to disrupt it. Maybe those of the guys on the team that don't like me, maybe this will fire them up. And if there's anybody on the team that does like me, maybe they'll dedicate the one for the Gipper we'll dedicate this season to him. Well, we didn't win another game. I mean, it was just, it just went downhill real quickly. But I have had, Coach Ronnie knows, I've had some better years, and I've had a lot of fun, and I had a great career. And about halfway through my middle school stint when I was coaching at Lipscomb, my son there on the right, we were playing just down the road a little bit at Carpenter Middle School. I had a really good game, and after I got through talking to the team, I found out later that they, that some of it, Brent, particularly in six of his friends, had engaged in a conversation that was not really appropriate, even for locker room. You know, there's locker room talk, and you know, some of that's okay. You know, it's not, locker room talk shouldn't be, you know, mixed with boys and girls, but you know, and I'm not talking about being vulgar and ugly, but you know, there's locker room talk. But this was beyond that. It was just not appropriate around anyone, about anything like that should be talked about anymore. Well, one of the guys that was not in their little group that was talking went out and told her girlfriend. And they got mad about that because they ended up telling a bunch of people around school. And so one day after practice, I talked to them, one of the boys, we'll keep this PG here. He urinated in a cup, and they put some water in it and made the boy drink. Did the tattletale. There's seven, you know, my son was part of that group that did this this hazing. That's pretty good hazing. And I found out about it, kicked all seven of them off the team, Michael Turner. Aside from tragedies that I've had to deal with some kids that have gotten killed that were on my team, that's the worst non-tragedy I've ever dealt with, having to kick my own kid off the team. It was a very difficult rest of the year for the whole school. It really created a big stink. It was tough. And in their little demented minds, for those of you who think, maybe you shouldn't have kicked them off, maybe I shouldn't have, I don't know. At the time, I felt like I did the right thing, but in their little demented minds, that then made them all even. In fact, they went out arm in arm, I was told later. It's like, the wrong has been righted. You have paid your penance, and okay, everything's even. But then, word got out, turned out to me, got to me, and then I kicked them all off the team. So, Brent was in the eighth grade, so that spring, something happened in his heart. And he just wanted a fresh start. He decided to repeat the eighth grade. And it was kind of a healing thing for me, actually. But what happened, even though he had to sit out, Coach Ronnie knows these rules better than me, he had to sit out his freshman year, couldn't play. But it gave him an extra year in high school to develop. He was a really good shooter. And, you know, he wasn't good enough to play for UCLA, but he got a scholarship to play down at Free. Who are our freak people here? We've got a few freak people. There we go. He, I think, graduated back in 07. Anyway, he ended up going to Free. Now, had he not gone to Free, and he wouldn't have gone to Free without a basketball scholarship, he would have gone to Lipscomb University because since I worked there, I get a 50% discount for his tuition. So it's either you're paying or you're going to Lipscomb, but he got the scholarship. There at Free, and he wouldn't have met this girl at Lipscomb. He met his future bride. That's actually the moment of proposal. One of his friends snapped that shot, and they got married, and then gave me these two grandkids who continue the tradition of healthy eating in my home. So proud. Now, here's the deal. My son had been part of that hazing group, hadn't got kicked off my team, he wouldn't have met her, and I wouldn't have those two little grandkids right there. I told that story at school one time, and a kid said, I said, what did you learn from the lesson we did on this? They said, well, if I get somebody to drink pee, something good will happen from it, according to Coach McPherson. So, I guess that's a good way to put it there. Joseph, sorry, I got him in. He looks a lot like David there. Joseph was sold, as you know, by his brothers. And then the incredible story, he ends up becoming the viceroy of, and the vice president, vice pharaoh of Egypt. And the guys, after old man Jacob dies, they come back. And I'm not sure, I've lost a few details here. I've got some verses up there. They're not going to come out like that. You can barely see it, I guess. They came up to him and said, "Joseph, you promised Dad you wouldn't harm us when Daddy died." So now they're nervous that, you know, the brother is going to get back at him with the power. And he could have said, "Boys, you know, came into town, you might have noticed those pyramids out there. Those are our tombstones. You boys are going to build mine by yourself. Better get started." He could have said, "Guards off with their heads." Nobody would have said a thing. Instead, Joseph said, "You meant it for evil. God meant it for good." I'm sorry, I've lost some. I don't know what's happened here. Have no idea, but they actually had the right colors there because you can't really see that gold there. But I think we make it out. "You meant it for evil. God meant it for good, in order to save many people." Now, when that happened, he wasn't seeing that this is going to be wonderful down the road. That when he grabbed them and they threw them in the pit and sold them, he wasn't seeing blue skies and rainbows. Stephen getting him to sit louder, Joseph. He wasn't doing that. But that event threw him down into Egypt, and it saved Joseph's life also, because if he hadn't been sold, he wouldn't have interpreted the dreams. He would not have been promoted. He would not have stored up the grain that saved not only his life and Egypt's life, but everybody else's life in the area when the famine hit. And this turned out to be the best day of his life. Now, that's harder for me to talk about now, because I don't think my wife's death is going to turn out to be the best day of my life. Joseph's wife didn't die of ALS. A lot of good things happened to him, but a lot of bad things had happened to him also. But he said to his brothers, "You meant for evil, God meant for good." That's Genesis 50, verse 20. This is the New Testament version of that. "We know that all things work together for good to them that love God." Look what that says again. It does not say God causes bad to happen. It says, "We know that all things, all work together for good to those of us that love God." So you've heard the expression, you know, if life hands you lemons, what are we supposed to do? Don't y'all study New Testament around here, James? Yeah, we're supposed to what? I would like to kind of tweak that a little bit. When you get lemons, when life hands you lemons, let God make the lemonade in your life. Now, you don't do it. He does. He makes the lemonade. Not in our great will and our great courage and our great dedication, but Him working through the events. Because I'm not doing anything great. I'm limping. I may stay up here to midnight, because when I go home, I'm going to be by myself, and some of you are also. And it's just not fun that the nights are long. It'd be nice if Stephen come over and bring some donuts. And a lot of y'all have given me stuff, but it'd be nice. But, you know, and a lot of you know what I mean by that. It's tough, but let God make the lemonade. Now, this is Shackle Island Church of Christ out in Gullettsville. Now, I went there in college to work with kids. That's where I did meet my wife, Willie Cato. Does anybody know that name? That's a old, if you know that name, you're older than me. Right, okay, there we go. God bless all of you. Brother Willie Cato, he was a preacher there. And just an incredible, incredible person. And I remember we were having a Sunday school class downstairs in the basement. And a girl about 16 years old had big tears in her eyes. After class, she came up to me. We'd been talking about family and dating and stuff like that. And I could tell she was going to dump one of those big teenage problems on me. And she said when she was 12, she had an operation. She was never going to be able to have children. And then she just stopped right there and waited for me to give the wonderful solution that will come about later. Here I am, 21, you know, and I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, kids will do that. They drop this stuff on you, you know, and it's tough sometimes to know what to do there. I'll tell you then what I told them. I was preparing this lesson. I've given this lesson several times, and years ago when I was putting some of the thoughts together for this, and I tweak all these all the time, but I was reading about a couple in England that were getting a divorce, and they met at a little pub and were discussing who would get the rugby tickets and the tea set and the tickets over to the Wimbledon and all that. And so they're, you know, just they're having a very civil meal. Well, she was living with her mom at the time, and her mom had dropped her off at this little pub restaurant. So after they were through, her husband, who was about to be divorced from her, he gave her a ride back to her apartment where she stayed with her mom. On the way there, they had a wreck. It was not critical. It was not life-threatening, but they were both bumped up, banged up pretty good. And so when they were filling out their forms to be admitted to the hospital, the nurses saw that they filed separated. And these nurses decided to put them in the same room together during the recovery, hoping that going through this recovery together would bring them back closer. And I was reading this article, and it says it worked. They called off the divorce and stayed married. And then the end of the article said, who would have thought that a motorcycle wreck could turn out to be good? Now, I can't recommend that for marriage counseling. Having a tough time with your spouse, get ready, honey, we're going into the ditch here on purpose. You can't set it up. You can't set up the bad stuff. And sometimes you can't see at the time that it's going to be something good. So I'm telling that story in school one day, in class. And a kid raised his hand and he said, my parents, before they met, both lived in the apartment complex. A tornado came through. And it lifted a section of the roof off of where his future mom was living and threw it down on his future dad's car. That's how they met. They were out there looking at the damage, surveying it, and exchanging insurance information. And he said, my future dad said, hey, you want to go out there and talk about it tonight? That's how they met, because of a tornado. And I'm sitting there looking at this kid that played point guard for us, that he's alive because of a tornado. Can't plan some of this stuff. Perhaps some of you, maybe this has happened to you, maybe it happened to your parents. Maybe your parents were dating some other people. Maybe they broke up. Maybe there may be people in here that may have been engaged, or your parents were engaged to someone else, and someone broke it off. And you're here because somebody broke that engagement. Every single year in class at school, I have kids that are there because one of their parents had been jilted and were engaged, and the person called it off and they married somebody else. So this sweetheart became a broken heart, but it led to the beating of that kid's heart. I came up with that. That's original to me. You want to write that down. So sometimes that stuff happens. It happens for the good. So I'm telling that story, and in another class, the kid tells me that his granddad was at the Naval Academy and had gone there on a track and field scholarship, and he was a runner. And this is back when they had those real sharp nail spikes, and he's running on the back stretch, and another competitor caught his heel and tore his heel, his Achilles, shredded it. And it was so bad, he had to be honorably discharged from the Naval Academy. Then World War II starts. He found out years later that every single guy in his class got killed in World War II. Every one of them. And he lived because he got his ankle tore up. Never know. I was hoping that my brother's struggle with alcoholism would one day lead to him helping other people. Maybe being a counselor, that did not happen. But I do know this. I've worked with a lot of alcoholism in my family, my students, my friends, friends of my family. And I have taken a lot of people to rehab centers. Every single one of them have counselors that used to be they're recovered alcoholics. I mean, if you were needing a counselor for alcoholism, wouldn't you want somebody that's been through it? You don't want somebody practicing to be your counselor, but you do want somebody that's been through that. You want somebody that understands that. When I was growing up, and it doesn't look so bad now, but I wear a size 15 now. So it doesn't look, you can't tell how that distorted now because I'm 6'2". But when I was young, my feet were growing longer than I was growing high. And so I looked kind of like an L that wasn't shaped right. And my feet were just way out here, and I'm kicking people way down the hall. And during the winter, there were Bigfoot reports in my neighborhood, and I knew it was just me where I'd been walking around out there. And it just kind of drove me crazy. And people, in junior high school, as we used to be in, we're always so sympathetic, saying, "You've got big feet." Well, thank you, Sherlock, for your, acknowledgement of that. I appreciate that. At a very early age, kids, and I know a lot of y'all are too little to even be listening right now, that's okay, but it told me, don't make fun of the way people look. It hurts their feelings. Don't make fun of the way other people look. It hurts them. It hurts their feelings. So I'm kind of glad that happened because it kept me from trying to hurt somebody else's feelings. We're down at the Woodson Chapel Church, and one of our elders, former elders, was Jack James. He's on along in years now. He's just an incredible person, and I'm going to have to go to my slides. Excuse me, may need your help here for a second. For some reason, it's running ahead on me. That's the reason I see that. Okay. He was an outstanding baseball player. And in fact, one weekend in high school, he pitched two no-hitters. He was just an incredible athlete. And he was offered a scholarship just back in the 1940s to University of Virginia. But the Boston Red Sox were also after him. They signed him to their farm team to the minor leagues. And so this is him signing with the Red Sox there. And he's very excited about that. Well, he hurt his knee during the season, and the Sox wanted him to come back and try it one more time. And he thought, I might could do it. It's just going to be so much work. Of course, back then, they didn't have those lucrative contracts to tempt you to stay. He's not making very much money at all. So he decided to give it up, and he ended up joining the Airborne Reserve. And anyway, he ended up meeting a girl because he went to the service and was introduced to a girl. And this girl became his wife, and she also converted him. And he'll tell you right now, the best thing that ever happened to him was when he lost his baseball career. He picked up his woman and salvation. It's a pretty good trade-off. Looked bad. This guy played so who was the great Boston Red Sox hitter? What was his name? Gone blank now. Ted Williams. He could have been playing with Ted. Maybe he'd be on baseball cards. He lost all that and picked up a couple things that were a whole lot more important. You may know what those are. Those are slave ships. And this is the diagram how these guys that would go into Africa and where they could most expeditiously pack people in to get the most people on the ships to bring them over to England and to America. And, you know, it's a real blight on our country. It's embarrassing. It's unbelievable how some people in the South would even defend it, saying, well, it better, some of them would have been better off than not being slaves. That's pretty offensive to an African-American person because they're being owned. They even use the Bible to defend it, but the Bible slavery is nothing at all like Old South slavery in America. It's not the same thing. It was more like indentured servanthood in the Old Testament. You were released after 7 years. You were taken care of by the family. You became part of the family. And then after 7 years, if you wanted to join, what happened to you? Here's my ear. You could go through a ceremony to stay with the family. As terrible as that is, we wouldn't have Michael Jordan. I have a lot of African-American friends, kids that I've coached. It's terrible that slavery occurred. But I know some people and love some people and coach people. And great students, great friends, great family, African-American. And God took some real sour stuff and it's turned it into a lot of sweet stuff. This is, some of y'all remember this guy, Marshall Keeble. Remember him? Anybody heard that name? He preached in the South when it, you know, there's a lot of race issues back then. I mean, there's a lot of them. And yet, to the credit of some of the white congregations, they invited him to preach. Here's one where it's so packed, the kids are piled up around the pulpit. People have estimated that at least 50,000 people were baptized at his gospel meetings. We wouldn't have had him over here had it not been for the horrible slave trade. That doesn't justify the slave trade. It just shows how God takes the worst lemons in the world and turns them into something great. If you haven't read this book, it's really motivating. Corrie ten Boom was a Hollander who hid Jews. Her family hid Jews when she was a kid during World War II. She and her sister Bessie were sent to this German women's POW camp, Ravensbrück. That's the actual camp there. Corrie and Bessie, the one on the left, they were sent there. They were sisters at the time. And these are some of the women from that same compound. It was a horrible work camp and just a terrible condition here. And the first time after they were put on those trains and taken over to Ravensbrück, they were thrown in these barracks. And as soon as they laid down, and you can see from this photo here, they don't have pretty nice cool mattresses for them. They set up because there were fleas all over the place. Fleas were everywhere. So they settled into this horrible life. Every night, they smuggled a Bible in with them. And every night, Corrie and Betsy would have devotionals with the other women. And they had come across a verse that said, in everything give thanks. And Betsy, she's one of those that are almost too spiritual for their shoes. You know, it sounds kind of bad to say, but it's like she said, we should give thanks for the fleas. Of course, said, what are you talking about? She said, well, the verse says, and everything give thanks. She said, I'm not thanking God for fleas. She said, that's what it says, and everything give thanks. She said, okay, just thank God for the fleas. They found out later, they were able to have those devotions every night because the guards would not go near that barracks to attack and assault the women because of the fleas. And they were able to safely, at least at night, read their Bible and be together without some guard dragging them out and assaulting them. And they then truly thanked God for the fleas. We usually don't thank God for insects like that. I grew up at the Radnor Church here. And this is a group of guys I taught on Wednesday night when I was 18. It was one of the most challenging assignments I've ever had, teaching seventh grade guys. And that's only about half the class, and we had about half the kids were from homes like mine, and half were from a real rough part of town, and we all came together. And so I'm teaching this group, and one of the boys named Jerry is from, you know, his rough part of town. He didn't have the kind of upbringing I had, and so he was really being disruptive. And so I took him out and placed him in the hallway, hoping somebody, the supervisors would come by and take him. And I went back to teaching, and boom, the door popped open. He's sitting there in the middle of the door, just grinning. He kicked it open, he was sitting down on the floor, just kicked it open, just grinning at me. I went over and closed it, went back to teaching, and boom, he pops it open again. Now, I'm not telling you what I did was right, I'm just telling you what I did. I went over and picked him up by the collar and said, "You're going with me." And I was dragging him down the hall. And even though I wasn't afraid of a seventh grader, he was a bully among the seventh. He was a tough seventh grader. I wasn't scared of him, but he was a tough seventh grader. And he wasn't afraid to fight. And he drew his fist back, and he stopped right at my face and said, "I'm going to hit you. I want to hit you so bad." And the whole time I was thinking, "Please do. Then I will get to do what I want." I was hoping he would hit me, and then I could do some things to him that I wanted to do. So I took him down and gave him to the supervisors. I went to my youth minister, Lyle Thomas, who does the inner city ministry. Been doing that 40 years. Our church actually started, our youth group started the inner city ministry. And I, you know, I'd never cried. I was 18 years old. If I did cry, I'd make sure nobody saw it. And I said, "I can't teach these kids. I don't want to teach these kids. Please don't make me teach these kids." Well, I found out that Jerry, on the weekends when his dad was drinking, say with his buddies, say, "Jerry, come here, let's show him how tough you are." And Jerry would pull his shirt up, and his dad would take a live cigarette and stick it on his stomach. Say, "Show him, Jerry, show him how tough you are." Jerry would just be like this, not flinching. That's the kind of home he came from. See, I was thinking he should come in there and, "Brother of mine, break into us the bread of life." He didn't have the kind of home I did. Jerry took his life when he was 18. And that taught me, you know, when kids give me trouble in class, I better find out why. There's something going on. And at this church, at your schools, the kids that are causing the problem, something's wrong at home most of the time. There's something that's not right. We need to work with that and see if we can help them there. I went to junior high school in Old Apollo. I don't know if you can see. There we go. Can you spot me? Yeah, there I am in a Star Trek sweater. Well, went out for basketball. This was the team. If you look real closely, I'm not in the photo. Because at the tryouts that I had this glory that I would be shining, I was, those dreams were shattered. And I pictured myself coming down the court like this when the coach ended up cutting me, and I lost all those dreams there. Now, here's how I was cut. We did layups. Coach Ron, you'll love this tryout story. We did layups for 30 minutes. He came over to a few of us and said, "Y'all going to get cut anyway, going to the locker room." That was the tryout. That, I don't know what I did right before that, right after that. I remember that very, I remember those 30 minutes, and I remember that coach coming over and doing that. Now, I've had to cut a lot, and we don't always cut the right way. It's a tough job. It's the one thing in coaching I hate. But I know this, I'm not going to cut that way. I mean, I went home in tears, and I hated it at the time. I'm really glad he cut me that way now. Because I made sure I'm not going to ever cut anybody like that. I haven't always cut perfectly. There's no perfect way. But you can't do that. You know. And, you know, I made it. My parents, you know, today they'd go up to school. My dad said, "Work hard, son." Because that's the way it was back then. Our parents didn't love us. And we know it. That's what made us tough. Y'all love these children too much. That's the problem right now. Not really. Just keep loving them. That's just different times back then. Well, I don't know what's happened to my special. I mean, to my. I don't know what's happened exactly here. Anyway, that's supposed to say sodium and chloride. What does that make? Anybody remember? Makes that. What's sodium and chloride apart from each other? Poisonous. But when they're blended together, they make something that's palatable. You know, when someone's cross-stitching, you look over on the backside and it looks horrible. And you flip it around and it's something that has beauty and color. Something magnificent. And on the back, it's a mess. This is life. It's a mess on one side, but God's turning it into something that's really great. You know, Joseph was put in prison, learned how to caretake a prison to get him ready to be in charge of Pharaoh's country. He meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Before I close with Lisa there, the little girl that came up to me at Shackle Island Church of Christ in 1978, at age 16, wondering why she couldn't have children. I guess God gave this to me because I'm an Antioch boy. We're really slow, and especially in math, we were a big failed experiment. But I said to her, one day you're going to meet a guy, you're going to fall in love, you're going to have to tell him that you can't have kids. He's going to say, that's okay, and you're going to adopt, and that kid's going to go to heaven. And you would have never adopted that kid if you had your own. And that kid's going to get to go to heaven. You think that might have happened? Yeah. I told that story at a camp in Chattanooga one year. And a girl came up to me, 60 years old, crying again. This one said, I've been bitter about being adopted until that story. And I started crying. I said, well, I'm glad I came down here and told it then. And she realized, I'm going to heaven because of something that was horrible. I had a student that was adopted from Russia before she even remembers. Her mom was a prostitute, and her mom died of alcoholism with this little girl at age 2 in the bed with her mom for 3 days before they found her body. If that mom hadn't died, that little girl would have had no chance. Instead, that horrible death that mom went through brought that little girl to the United States, where she could go to church in Disneyland. Pretty good deal. This lesson is very difficult for me to give because I realize that good things are going to come from her death. That's really hard. It's really hard for me to swallow. But I believe it's true. I don't like the fact that she's died. I don't think God took her life. I don't think God killed her. I don't think he needed another angel. I don't think he needed somebody up there to help him. But her unfortunate death, her funeral was incredible. She had 6 very close friends at church, and they put up a display of her life, pictures, that was absolutely overwhelmingly beautiful. Showing her whole life from beginning to end. I've had 2 men tell me that her funeral changed their wife's life. You know, that helps. It does help. It doesn't make it easy. I'm working in the prison ministry now on Sunday afternoons. The only reason I'm working in it is because she died and I have the time. She was still alive with my busy schedule. I'd still be coaching. If she hadn't gotten sick, I wouldn't have been involved in the Sunday afternoon prison ministry. And I baptized a kid 2 weeks ago, 18 years old down there. And I told him, I said, I would have never met you if my wife hadn't died. I said, and I'll be honest with you, I wish she was alive and somebody else had come down here to convert you. But mate, I don't know. I just, that helps, knowing that maybe stuff like that's happening. She said that she can accept this disease if it brings somebody closer to God. And I guess it's done that. But I know this, God's in control of it. And I hope you'll realize that the horrible things that are happening in our lives are not caused by God. It's not God's will. But God will use them. And we have to let Him do that. We have to let Him do that. And we just got to go through it. We got to realize it's all going to be over one day anyway. little kid out in California, 16, I say literally 16-year-old boy, he had been in the hospital for cancer treatments more than he had been at home in 16 years. And a Christian magazine interviewed him one day and said, "Jason, do you think God has ripped you off?" And he said, "No, I don't feel that way. But if he has, he's got all eternity to make it up to me. This is all going to be a bump in the road. It's not right now. Right now, I'm climbing Mount Everest right now. But one day it's going to be a molehill. I want to thank y'all for letting me come out here and for the invitation. Appreciate it a lot. Y'all have been an excellent class. I really did not think I would go this late each night. I was going to quit late, early last night. That was the ball game. How did the game go? We lost. I guess I should have kept preaching. I was going to let y'all out early to go stretch. Maybe that was the reason y'all didn't have time to spread.
That's it.
Yeah, that was it probably. I'll take the hit for that. But y'all have been a wonderful group, and I appreciate your incredible attention and encouragement. It's been a lot. And our attendance has been unbelievable. This has truly been something that's been good for me. So we're going to have an invitation song here. And if we can help you with something, we'll stand at this time. Stephen leads us for our last invitation song.